Coming to you from the HagmanReport.com studio, located in the Keystone State, birthplace of a mighty nation, it's your host, Doug Hagman.
And welcome to Hagman. This is the Hagman Report, where truth can't be silenced. And if you are an American and you are paying attention, then you should be very angry, right? I want to welcome everyone to this program. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, whatever the case might be. Remember when Art Bell opened with something like that in his program, of course. We're appealing to time zones all across the world. So I just want to welcome you to today's program. We've got a great show for you lined up today. Got a great show for you lined up. Yes, of course, Monday, John Moore, thelibertyman.com on deck, as well as, that's right, the head of the Freedom Center USA, Sam Andrews. The reason I asked Sam to come on is because we had a good discussion off air yesterday, I think it was. I don't know, today, this morning, or sometime, about what the breakup, if you will, or breakdown of the United States will look like in terms of states. And speaking of that, let me just open this up by saying that 225 years ago yesterday, how time flies. It seems like just yesterday. September 19th, 1770 or 1796, George Washington, President George Washington, gave his famous farewell address, leaving the American people a parting gift of 20 prophetic warnings. This a tweet by Laura Loomer, and we wish Laura the best as well as she recovers from the Communist Chinese Party virus. But rumors, you know, aside, she's actually feeling better with ivermectin and other non-vaxxed solutions. But anyway, here they are on the screen. If you're looking or if you're watching this, here they are. Avoid overgrown military establishments. This is number two. They are hostile to liberty. Boy, haven't we seen that? Hey, General Milley. Of course, the first one, be vigilant. People will seek to use the government for selfish ends. And I'm reading these because we have, well, you know what? We just passed 1.55 million listeners, of course, on the various audio platforms all across the world here in the last 30 days. So 1.55 unique listens, downloads on our audio platform. So for your benefit, let me just read a few more here. Prevent all obstructions to the execution of the laws. You know, like Antifa and Black Lives Matter and the type of people. Control bureaucracies. Make sure they all work together. Yeah. Good night. All right. So avoid political parties. Wow. There's a thought. Look, it's us v them or them v us. The, what they like to think of themselves as the elite, or what I like to term them as the scumbaggery of the political parties. They will cause divisive factions, and unscrupulous men will use them to undermine the government. Give allegiance to the Constitution. Or in the words of G.W. Bush Jr., you know, W. Just a GD piece of paper. Do not alter the Constitution lightly or based on hypothesis. Apply the experience applied when it was created. You think we could do that today? Where are all the statesmen today? And do not even bring up Convention of States. Do not do that. That would be a horrific idea. Anyway, be suspicious of administrators. They may serve themselves rather than the people. Gee, wise words, simple. But look where we're at here. Religion and morality are essential to create the virtue necessary to preserve the Union. You think? Yes. When we kicked God out of the general environment of the United States, out of our institutions, out of the courts, out of the schools, we've essentially lost everything. We lost that morality. Now we have a bunch of communist and if I may say so, faggotry in the school system. We have a bunch of perversity in the school system. We have a bunch of communists in the school system. Why? Because of the vacuum that was created when we kicked God out. Avoid debt and immediately discharge any debt created by war. What's our national debt up to now? How many gazillion dollars? Yeah, taxes aren't pleasant. Government spending should be candidly conducted. Well, hey, Joe Biden, you just armed the military, the Taliban. Taliban. We have the best Taliban that American taxpayer money can buy. 3% of the taxes paid by Americans right now are in the hands of the Taliban, thanks to Joe Biden.
Well,
yes,
he doesn't really know he did that.
No, of course not. Of course not. I think Sam and John might have. Yeah, never mind. Okay. So in trade give no nation a favored nation status. You're doggone right. It's USA, United States first. MAGA. And MAGA, if you associate that with Donald Trump, fine. I don't care. But make and keep America great. And lastly, be guided by principles. By principles, not interests. There's a play on words there, which I won't get into. All right, with me, excuse me. Boy, I sounded like I got goose there, didn't I? Eric the Tech, how was your weekend? Yeah, how was your weekend?
It was pretty good. How about you?
Oh, I was busy.
I was running some electric, some insulation, uh-huh. Fun stuff, you know.
Uh-huh. Did you get shocked or anything?
Nah.
Yeah. No, not a little bit. Okay. Again, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We've got a lot of stuff to get into, so let's get right into it. John Moore, thelibertyman.com. That's John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Link in the program description box, as well as Sam Andrews, Freedom Center USA. Hey, gentlemen, welcome. Let's get right down to things. How you guys doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Sam, how about you?
Just working hard, getting ready to defend against this tyranny. Loving it.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. Line them up. So right before airtime, Sam, you were talking about what George Washington, as a military officer, did to, how he commanded his forces. You want to kind of recap that?
Yeah, George Washington had a problem amongst his troops. He had some deserters from his army in the middle of a critical moment in our history. He took these deserters, rounded them up, had some of his men he could trust go and get them and bring them back. And he found out through interrogation that some of the sergeants over these men sort of gave him the wink and the nod to go ahead and desert. So he took these sergeants involved with this, and he made them draw straws. And the guy that drew the short straw of the sergeants was ordered under duress with weapons pointed at his head to shoot and kill the deserters in a firing squad scenario. And once that sergeant had executed his own men, which was horrific for him to go through, he took the remaining sergeants, including the one that executed the men and drew the short straw, and he put them on a line in a firing squad, and he had his men execute those sergeants. And he did this in front of a huge number of troops to make a point. My point in bringing that up to Doug was that men, our founding fathers, the real men that founded this nation, were disciplined, ruthless in enforcing the rules. There was no wiggle room with them. There were no excuses. There was no rationalization. You either did the right thing and you were rewarded, or you did the wrong thing and you were punished, and punished severely, even death. The problem today is our men lack virtue. They're run by their own wives or their own girlfriends or their own selfishness or their own greed. They're not run by a moral framework. The type of thing that God established in incredible strength in our founding fathers' very beings. And we need to get back to not only unifying principles, but we need to start elevating men of virtue. There are men of virtue in our society. We need to find them. We need to educate them. And we need to elevate them to position of power. And the only way we will be able to do that is to fix our broken election system where fraud is just rampant.
Yeah, white election system. John, you agree with that? Do you agree with that?
Well, I agree absolutely. I refer to the opposition as the socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims. What they came up with in 2020, unless it's changed, they will win every election, not just the presidential election, but all elections, all the way down to local mayors and school boards. And if that's not fixed, we're done as a republic. We're absolutely finished.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree with you on that. And you know, we can't, and gentlemen, here's my position. We cannot get past or let go what happened in November of 2019. On November 3rd, we cannot allow anyone to rest until we get to the bottom of November 3rd, 2019. We cannot rest until we find out who was behind, domestically, who was behind the greatest election fraud in the history of this country, and internationally, who assisted, and then teach them a lesson that they'll never forget as short as they live. So that's my view on things. And the January 6th political prisoners in Washington, D.C., we can't forget them for speaking out and for showing up. Now, I'm not talking about the people who broke windows and smashed things. Those were the feds or Fed-assisted, facilitated troublemakers. I'm talking about the people who just showed up to be there to listen to the speech, like, if I may, Sam Andrews, because it's no secret you were there. And, of course, yeah. And was it you that broke that window?
No, I didn't break any windows. I didn't break any laws.
There you go. But yet, you know, there's something called green fence, or Google fence, I believe it is, which if you're in an area and you have a cell phone and a crime is committed, I think it's Google Fence, not Green Fence. Google Fence will put you at that scene or put you in that area, turn the information over to the police, and they'll spank you potentially. But anyway, have you, by the way, John, or Sam, and then we'll kick John. Have you received any fallout from your presence in D.C. on January 6th?
Oh, yeah. I've gotten a number of phone calls from feds. I've had reporters call me and try and set me up, probably motivated by the feds. I've had two FBI agents knock on my door to harass me and say, we need to question you. You know, of course, my response to them was no honest American would have anything to do with the crooked FBI. After what you did to General Flynn, modifying 302, setting him up, basically trying to entrap him and then extort him, there's no intelligent American that would speak to you people. You're the enemy of the American people. And if you're a young lawyer that joined the FBI to serve your country, understand that there's other ways to serve your country than working for the criminal cabal called the FBI. Mm.
John, we you and I grew, and Sam too, but I think we might be a little older, or maybe Sam's older than me. I don't know. We grew up with the Efren Zimbalist Jr. FBI, right?
That's right.
Now, were they not a stellar organization at one point, or were they never a stellar organization? It was just all smoke and mirrors.
Well, one of the foundational parts of the FBI and its reputation has been the FBI crime laboratory. I don't know how many decades, but many decades. They falsely claimed that there was such a thing as difference between one human hair and another sufficient to use as a method of convicting a person of a crime. It's only been a few months now we found out that there is no discernible difference to identify one human hair from another, to identify that human hair with another human being that the hair allegedly came from. I suspect this goes back to at least the 1960s, possibly the 1950s, where hair analysis was given the same stature as fingerprint analysis. I'm sure there's been many thousands of men and women who either pled guilty or were convicted based on false information coming from the FBI laboratory. In addition, there's been a lot of evidence the last several years of the FBI crime laboratory falsifying evidence in other ways. That's not acceptable, and their foundation is broken, and their trust with the public is broken. I don't know that it can ever be fixed. So what we grew up with, Efren Zimbalist Jr. jumping into his Mustang convertible in front of the FBI headquarters, was a fantasy, largely. And I don't know if it could be fixed. I think Sam advocates breaking it apart and starting fresh. I had this conversation with a couple of FBI agents. I said there's no provision in Article 1, Section 8 for any spending authority to give money to something called the Federal Bureau of Investigation. You can have bake sales, but there's no provision in the U.S. Constitution for U.S. Treasury money to be spent on something as federal law enforcement. It's simply not there. Sam, you got to follow up.
Certainly. I think that any honest analysis of the FBI is going to show that their leadership, particularly J. Edgar Hoover and Louis Freeh and the last two directors, last four directors of the FBI for sure, have a history of corruption. And I think if we were to sit there and go through the list of corrupt activities of the FBI, and don't forget Robert Hansen, the head of FBI counterterrorism, that sold the names of over 40 of our clandestine operators to our foreign enemies. Straight up treason, right? When you look at J. Edgar Hoover, you look at Robert Hansen, you look at the Waco debacle, the Ruby Ridge debacle, you look at the Ferguson situation, which I was personally involved in, where the FBI snipers were positioned to shoot my men that were guarding innocent people in apartments on the second floor above businesses in Ferguson. They have such a long history of corruption, along with the BLM, along with the FDA, along with the EPA. There are a number of federal agencies. Look at what the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, look at what they did with Fast and Furious. No one's ever been held accountable for any of these things. And it brings us sort of quickly to the subject of qualified immunity, which in practice is never qualified. Immunity in practice with a federal agent is blanket immunity. It was supposed to be qualified immunity. And what qualified immunity means is that if you are operating in good faith within the law under your responsibilities as a federal agent, you're protected from lawsuits and criminal prosecution. Here's the problem. Over the years, with the corrupt courts, qualified immunity, and a corrupt Justice Department in particular, qualified immunity has functionally turned into blanket immunity. We have no way to effectively implement qualified immunity under the current circumstances, which means FBI HRT and some of these other clandestine federal operators can do whatever they want completely unchecked. The Congress, the U.S. Senate, and the U.S. House of Representatives are scared of these people, so their oversight responsibilities are ignored because they don't want to poke the giant, which is quite dangerous at this point. And it's really frightening the position that America has put themselves in with election fraud, an FBI that's out of control, an NSA that's out of control, several other federal agencies that are completely out of control, and a U.S. military, including the Joint Chief, Chairman of the Joint Chief, and McKenzie, who was heading up the command over in Afghanistan. These people are traitors. Not a single one of them resigned when the plan was pushed forward to arm our enemies, one of our three most dangerous enemies on planet Earth, most dangerous enemies to the American people, to arm them with $88 billion worth of weapons, including but not limited to 600,000 full auto and semi-auto weapons, small arms, 120 machine guns, 120,000 machine guns, heavy machine guns, 160,000 secure communications equipment, over 2,400 bombs, including aircraft, armored vehicles. And I mean, I could go down the list, but I don't want to waste time. They basically made the Taliban one of the best equipped armies on the planet. And it's unconscionable that these people aren't being tried for treason at this very moment.
Why, John, why aren't they being charged for treason? I mean, certainly, look, you know, folks, now I understand treason by definition is a wartime, it would be, treason by definition is prosecuted under a wartime condition. And we're not in a wartime condition, or we haven't declared war, except, you know, the war on drugs, the war on this, the war on that, the war on, you know, the war on truth. Okay, the undeclared wars, at least congressionally undeclared wars. But there's got to be some, John, there's got to be some level of...
Well,
go ahead.
If it was wartime, the military would be doing military tribunals. But since we're not officially at war, even though we are at war with China, that's not happening. The Department of Justice is controlled by Biden, so it's not going to happen. International Court at The Hague, I don't expect anything out of them. So we're pretty much at a dead end. Possibly civil lawsuits having any merit are slim to none. So I think we're at a dead end in terms of any legal process for the time being. If President Trump, by some miracle, got back into office, then there may be some hope. But until then, I don't see any hope of any legal process helping us here, Doug, at all.
All right. So what we have here, gentlemen, is a situation now where we have no laws. We have no structure in this country, in my view, anyway. Or we have laws for us, for the little ones, for the unwashed masses, but not for the select few who think that they run the planet. So, using the corona or the Chinese Communist Party virus as an example, I know, Sam, that you've got a map of the United States. And this map is pretty significantly telling in, with respect to, okay, these are the states that are not going to be complying, the states that are darkly colored, folks. If you're looking or if you're watching this on Rumble or on Brighteon, you can see it. The states that are darkly colored there are the states who have said essentially to the feds, hey, you know what? We ain't doing this. In the lighter color states, that's occupied territory, occupied by the communists, by the new global governance, the Klaus Schwab style, Justin Trudeau style government. So, here we go. Okay. Now seeing that, and both of you gentlemen in conjunction with the fact that in just the first half of 2021, we saw 3.2 million new first time gun purchasers in the United States. Well, let's talk about this, gentlemen. All right, let's survey 3.2 million new gun owners in the first half of 2021. Obviously, people are expecting something to happen. And Sam, I know you've got like a whole bunch of information about gun ownership and, you know, the fact that if you never fire it, you know, they're safe queen guns, basically. And I know you're pretty passionate about that. And John, I know that you're same, pretty passionate about that, and I know you two have a good dialogue. So I'm going to do is I'm going to kind of step back out of this conversation. John, I'm going to kick it to you. You and Sam talk about what all of this means, if you don't mind, and I'll jump in when I feel it's necessary, if I want to interrupt, just because I do. So, how's that?
Well, okay. One of the things that's unique about the United States is private ownership of firearms. Most countries have a process that people can own firearms. Typically, it involves licensing of the person and registration of the firearms. It's frequently all the way down to 22 long rifle. Our country is quite unique in our ability to own firearms without registration of the people, without registration of the firearms, without registration of the ammunition, which you see that in many countries also. That's a line in the sand that we will defend that can't be crossed. I became a radio talk show host back in the mid-90s, specifically focusing on the Second Amendment, and it's gone from there. But things haven't changed in these 20 plus years that I've been doing this, Doug, the absolute need to defend the Second Amendment, to make sure that Americans continue to have unrestricted access to essentially the same firearms as the infantryman does, which for the most part we do. There's a lot of mythology and a lot of people who have thoughts about firearms that aren't accurate, aren't correct, and we do our best to correct that also on Firearms Monday. But point being, we must always maintain the Second Amendment as one of the foundational parts of our republic, something that can't be allowed to be tampered with, and won't be allowed to be tampered with. If and when they come for the guns, it's game over in terms of peace. If they want to start a war, go after the guns. Now, I don't support much of what the NRA does politically anymore, but I have to admit that following Hurricane Katrina, they did help get legislation passed in Louisiana to prevent the door-to-door seizure of firearms from honest Americans in New Orleans area that wanted to particularly just protect lives and property. One video of a older woman having her guns forcibly taken from her by the police went viral, and it should have gone viral. And the police involved in that should have been admonished. They should have been shamed for doing what they did to that that honest woman trying to protect herself and her property. And Sam, I'm sure you got some follow-up, sir.
Well, when I show this map right here, okay, I want people to understand you're looking at the new or the remnants of what is free America. The dark states are going to oppose tyranny because their citizens want to oppose tyranny. The light states are going to allow almost any level of tyranny to be imposed upon them. Now, if you notice Australia, Australia gave up their guns long before the COVID debacle. And it's important to understand that when Australian citizens gave up their guns, they opened the door to tyranny. Do some research, get online, watch the videos of the Australian police brutalizing people for driving alone in a car and not wearing a mask. The insanity has begun, folks. Now, there's only one effective way to prevent tyranny, and that's through legitimate, skilled use of force. And I'll give you two examples. Let's talk about the gentleman in Tiananmen Square. Everyone remembers the brave hero that stood in front of the Chinese tank in Tiananmen Square. I'm going to ask you a very simple question. What happened to that man? Is he still with us today? The answer is no. He was destroyed by a tank that ran over him and literally used his flesh and bones to grease the treads of that tank. I would offer to you that's not an effective way to stand up to tyranny. Now, I'll give you a second example. 80 brave men in Ferguson on the rooftops, armed to the teeth, with full kit rifles, thousands and thousands of rounds of ammunition. Wildness in the street, burning of buildings, police angry. And the White House, in the unified command meeting of the police, orders them to shoot the honest men on the rooftops guarding black and Asian people in apartments and protecting them from arson. That's right. The feds ordered the FBI and the local state police snipers to shoot the men on the rooftops that were guarding people. And being part of the solution, not part of the problem. Okay. Why didn't it happen? Because the SWAT snipers on the highway patrol said, are you effing crazy? We're not going to start a gunfight with those guys. They're not only more experienced than we are, they're better armed than we are. And we're not starting a fight with them. There's no reason to do that. That doesn't make sense. So what did the feds do? They snuck a bunch of FBI snipers into a house, and they were going to have them shoot our men the next day. And what happened? We caught them setting up inside. We called it into Unified Command. The police responded and shut the whole show down. Now, Here's the thing. Your government doesn't care about you. Your military is no longer trustworthy and responsible. No trustworthy and responsible military would leave 20,000 citizens behind and pull their military out, 20,000 U.S. citizens and 80,000 allies. And they certainly would never arm the enemy with $80 billion worth of weapons. So the great thing about Afghanistan, as tragic as it was, is it showed the American people that the military is full of order takers, not constitutional grown men who will keep their oath to the Constitution and the American people. And that's a very, very important thing to understand at this point in the juncture. If you're in denial and you still think that our U.S. military is protecting the American people and is all for us, you don't know the people in command, and you don't know how many people in the military will compromise what's left of their morals for paycheck and pension. We got a whole bunch of order takers in the military. We got some good guys in the military too. Our special operations forces, a lot of our Marines, a lot of our chief warrant officers and senior NCOs. These are good men. But I ask you this question. How many senior NCO in Afghanistan resigned when it was proposed that they give up Bagram Air Force Base and leave a bunch of civilians behind? The answer to that question, zero. Not a single one resigned. Not a single chief warrant officer resigned. Not a single intelligence officer resigned. Not a single colonel, light colonel, or flag officer resigned in protest to this absolutely criminal act. And we're going to pay for it. And we're going to pay for it dearly. And here's the sad part. The women of Afghanistan have become the sacrificial lamb to this tyranny and treason. We're going to pay for it eventually, but they're paying right now. And the American citizens that were left behind and our allies that were left behind are being murdered en masse right now as we speak. And the Biden administration is doing nothing about it for the reasons John discussed and for a whole host of other reasons like being bought and paid for by the Chinese government.
John?
John? I'm here.
What are we going to do about it? Both of you gentlemen, what are we going to do about this?
Okay. There's more than 3,300 counties in the United States. These political parties, which George Washington warned us about, all their power comes from the 3,300 plus counties. There's lots of activity at the county level. We have elected officials at the county level. We have central committees. We have Republican central committees and Democratic central committees and other parties as well. Many of these positions, which are elected positions, go unfilled all over the country. I'm a Republican committeeman for my township. The female part of my township goes vacant for the time being. I think we've got to recruit. But in many of the 3,300 plus counties, there's dozens and hundreds, possibly thousands, of unfilled positions. You can have a direct impact. If you walk into a congressman's office and you identify yourself as a Republican committeeman or a Republican committeewoman, you will be listened to. They're not necessarily going to do what you ask, but you will have an audience, more of an audience than if you are not in that position. If you have two or three committeemen and committeewomen go into a congressional office, then you really get listened to. And the congressman is more likely to pay attention to what you're saying and may or may not vote the way you like, but they like to get reelected. And they know that they're dependent upon getting reelected from the grassroots. And that's what the committeemen and committeemen women are nationwide. The power comes from the grassroots. Much of the money, not all of it, comes from the grassroots. The funding of these campaigns is upside down and backwards, where very large money has way too large of an impact on these elections. But going back to the basic foundation of what happened the first Tuesday in November, the mail-in ballots and the Dominion voting machines, if those are not done away with, we are finished as a republic, no matter what else happens. If those two things aren't done away with, we're done. There's no more republic. That's how serious this is, Doug. It is absolutely foundationally serious to do away with mail-in ballots and the Dominion voting machines. Those Dominion voting machines need to go into the ocean. The motor voter needs to be done away with. if people want to vote, let them take off an hour or two and go to the county courthouse and register to vote. If they're not interested enough to do that, they're not very interested in our republic. They've made it way too convenient, way too easy to vote, to have people register to vote. That could give us, a hoot about whether they vote or not. Of course, all those names being filled in those registrations is being used by the Democrats, socialists, communists, Democrats, Muslims, to have people vote that didn't vote in the first place. They're filling up the voter registration with people who never will vote, at least not themselves. They'll be voted for on behalf of them by the Dominion voting machines and the mail-in ballots that were never mailed in. What happened last November cannot be allowed to stand. Yeah, the audit may or may not put President Trump back in office. That's almost a side issue. The main issue, the heart of the matter, is the voting itself and the thousands of people voting in office all over the country. We have governors, state reps, state senators, U.S. senators, U.S. reps, city councilmen, mayors, school board officials, all over the country voted in office that were not duly elected by the people that were voting. Sam, your follow-up, please.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize the Dominion corruption fraud voting scheme got particular Democrats elected, but also Republicans. There are Republicans involved with this. You go online, you can see videos of Dominion parties with Republican senators and congressmen there. There are Republicans deep in bed with Dominion. That's important to understand. It's not just the Democrats. That's why the Republicans did not object to the voter fraud, because a number of them benefit from it. Now, what John said is absolutely critical for a couple of reasons, and I'd like to go through some of those. When you get involved at the local level, there's a number of things that need to happen. You need to get a constitutional sheriff elected in your county, and you need to fix the vote. You need to get rid of the electronic voting machines from your county. That's absolutely critical. That has to happen. But there's a third thing that people aren't necessarily focused on that's extremely important. Politicians over many decades have made it almost impossible, not quite, but almost impossible to withdraw consent. So as an elector, you as a citizen are an elector in a republic. And as an elector, you are giving consent to a human being to represent your interest in the state government and in the federal government. Here's the problem. If they don't represent you properly, it's incredibly difficult to withdraw your consent. If you can't withdraw your consent, then you don't really have representative government. And so one of the first things that has to be fixed, other than the election fraud issue and the constitutional sheriff issue, one of the next most important things is to reestablish the electors' authority, right, and privilege to withdraw consent if their representative is not properly representing them. You saw what happened in California with the recall election of Newsom. They flooded the system with fake ballots. They ran all kinds of electronic voting machine fraud. And the guy won by a bigger margin than he did in the general election. Now, nobody that's caused half the problems that Newsom has caused has won by a larger margin in a recall election, because there's a recall election for a reason. People are pissed off. Lots of people are angry. And there were millions of people angry with Newsom. This whole thing was a giant fraud, and he got away with it. So the withdrawal of consent and the election fraud are inseparable. And we've got to deal with those. And John is absolutely correct in pointing out that the way to do that is to get involved at grassroots level and demand change.
If I can jump in here, I agree with your statement. Withdrawal of consent, election fraud, inseparable. But I would also like to add that whether it's a mode or a means or even an opportunity, the Communist Chinese Party virus and the response to that is also inseparable from the entire picture. And one last comment, and then I'm going to turn it right back to both of you. I do, although we must, and I agree with John, we must get involved at a local level, a grassroots level. We must get, we must understand the power structure or the legal structure of the system. That is to say, you know, you've got your county, you city, county, then state, and then federal, and so on. But I don't believe at this point in American history, this is my personal opinion, I don't believe we are either going to litigate or vote our way out of the problems that we have right now. It is going to, it's going to come down to a fight, and I don't know what it's going to look like, and I'm not advocating for it. But I don't see any way, because as you said, Sam, and John, as you will know, the recall election of Gavin Newsom. Really? Did you think, ladies and gentlemen, that that was going to turn out any different than what it did? If you did, man, I'll tell you what, I feel sorry for you. So, gentlemen, those are my opinions. So go ahead.
Well, Doug, it's been about 8 years ago, maybe 10. I did a presentation at the home of the former president of the Bank of the Philippines, a beautiful estate in a beautiful gated community. During the question and answer period, me and my buddy were only two Caucasians there. This Filipino doctor who spent 6 months a year in the United States making buckets full of money and 6 months a year helping his people, he was so proud to tell me, "Oh, John, in the Philippines, we're getting electronic voting machines." I said, "Doc, please don't do that. It's no guarantee, but the closest to a guarantee we can have is paper ballots counted at the precinct. Because to commit fraud at that level means lots of fraud and lots of people being involved in a criminal activity, involved to the point where keeping it quiet and keeping it secret becomes much harder. Paper ballots counted at the precinct. And it's not perfect, no, but it's as close to perfection as we can get that I'm aware of. Now, up until recently, particularly November 3rd, 2020, that effort was looked at as a marginal effort on behalf of libertarians and people who wore tinfoil hats and really didn't understand our modern age and how our modern electronics work and so forth. No, I'm sorry. That's not the case. Not at all. It's not a great burden. Typical precinct, you're looking at about maybe 300 pieces of paper that 4 to 6 adults can count, 300 to 600, several hundred pieces of paper in a relatively short period of time. It's not a big logistical nightmare. Not at all. You have hard ink on paper evidence that can be stored away for further review if necessary. You've got a relatively quick, so what if it takes another hour or two to get the results in? What's the big deal? If it means you got an honest, free, and fair election, what's the big deal? Take another couple of hours. Count those ballots at the precinct. Now, Sam, I'm not aware of any other method that can come as close to giving us an honest election. Are you aware of any other system that can be more closer to do that, Sam?
It's not really different than your system, but it adds something to your system. And this is something I have been proposing for quite some time, and that is that we use a paper ballot system with a carbon copy, and we write laws that require the voter to maintain their copy of their ballot in good condition for 180 days. This is something very important. It distributes the data to the American people so that it can't be manipulated by those that would want to steal an election. So if you have paper ballots and you require the citizen to take a carbon copy home and keep it in readable condition for 180 days after the election, you can now sample ballots and compare them to the carbon copies the citizens have. And if you have a problem in a particular precinct, then you can call them all in and reconstitute the data in a very accurate way. The key to this is both paper ballots and distributed data. Because once the data is distributed amongst the citizens and it can be reconstituted, there's no way to cheat and get away with it.
I believe it's called NCR paper, self-carbonating paper. It's been around for, what, half a century or more?
Quite a while.
Yeah, a long time. And it's simple. It's off the shelf. It's no new technology. It's well-established technology. It's simple. The cost would be insignificant compared to the price of not having it. So I concur with you, Sam. We should do that.
Can you imagine how many paper ballots we could print on that type of paper for the cost of one giant legal contest on an election?
Oh, my. Oh my!
See, we're not looking at this in a very practical way. Like John said, it's simple to count ballots at the precinct level, and we need to have a very strict laws in the control of these ballots. And we don't have that now. We have a lot of cheating going on, particularly in the cities, with the handling of ballots, and it's just too easy an issue to solve. And it's really, you know, a lot of people don't realize when the Supreme Court gives an opinion, it's an opinion. The states can tell the Supreme Court to go take a long walk on a short pier. And when it comes to securing elections in the state, the Constitution gives the states the power to run their own elections. And it doesn't give the federal government the right to demand that the states have all these bogus scenarios where people can cheat. So the states need to stand up to the Department of Justice. They need to stand up to the Supreme Court, and they need to tell them to take a hike, and they need to properly secure their own elections, because that's where the Constitution, the legal aspects of this really lie. The power lies with the states. Now watch them over the next few years try and federalize control of the elections. That's almost as bad, if not worse, than giving up your guns. So you got to be very wary of this kind of stuff. Anytime you see consolidation of power, anytime you see power trying to be moved from the states to the federal government, you should be highly suspect and quite willing to oppose that type of tyranny.
And John, you know, I'll just add this, okay, to what you said earlier, both of you said earlier. You know, we're talking right now about a couple of things, our liberty and our freedom, both which are inherent, and removal of either liberty or freedom requires our consent, and we do not consent. The voting, the jab requirements, the voting issues, all of this, I believe, are intertwined, and are the the word I was going to use, I'm not going to use. I'll just say the afterbirth of the Klaus Schwab / Great Reset, you know, Bill Gates, Merkel, Trudeau, Biden, Clinton, all of these. This is really the worst of the worst coming out right now. And so we're seeing the votes, the voting issue. We're seeing all of this come together right now. And, you know, it's us versus them, or them versus us. So we cannot extract those issues, I don't think, from one another. So anyway, go ahead, John. I think I might have interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, not really, Doug. I'm personally aware, personally acquainted with men and women who have become Republican committee men and committee women because of my efforts on air. It just didn't occur to them until I mentioned it. They never thought about it. Most people in this country don't know there is such a thing as an elected committeeman and committeewoman for the Central Committee of the county I live in. But let's get back to some more foundational things. Sam, I think Doug's heard me say this, but you haven't. I'm going to talk about a very good friend of mine. He's a graduate, has a four-year degree from a brick-and-mortar college, not online degree, Air Force veteran. He's written a book about his chosen career. He's had as many as 8 and 10 employees in his business that he owns. A bright guy, good guy, husband, father, and so forth. He did not know, Sam, with that as a foundation, he did not know there is a difference between a United States senator and a state senator. Now, if somebody who's lived a life like I just described doesn't know that very foundational, basic thing about how our system works, it doesn't give me very much confidence in what people out there in around the country know about our system and how it works. And it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. And I'll follow it up with some, one more thing, Sam. You may or may not be old enough to remember the TV show Marcus Welby, MD, where the actor Robert Young every week pretended to be a doctor. Robert Young, the actor pretending to be a doctor, got 200 to 300 letters a week from people who could read and write asking for medical advice, keeping in mind that about half the Americans in this country are functionally illiterate. Now, when we get people writing an actor for medical advice, when we got graduates of four-year universities with 8 and 10 employees in their private company who don't know the difference between a U.S. senator and a state senator, I won't say it's hopeless, but it's not far from it. Your response, sir?
Well, I'll just go back to Scripture, where you'll find a verse that says, my people perish because of their lack of knowledge. And that's an axiom that we're probably not going to get away from in America. If people continue to ignore civics and ignore the system and are more fixated and inwardly focused on their own self-interest. We had a caller in on John's show today that very aptly pointed out that if you're not willing to defend the rights of other people, you don't deserve rights. Now, I'm not going to say you don't deserve rights, but I'm going to say you may not have them for very long. I mean, look at all the people in Germany that turned a blind eye to what Hitler did to Jews. And then look at what happened to the next group and the next group. And you have to understand that it's not all about you, that there is a collective group of God's humans on this planet. And we should be willing to defend everyone's God-given rights, not just our own. And if you're not willing to do that, the tyranny that's visited upon your neighbor will eventually be at your front doorstep. And I think that when you look at, there's two things that bother me mainly with men in this country. One is the feminization of men. Their wives or their girlfriends or their own selfish desires rule their world. Okay. They're not like the men that I grew up with. And the men that I grew up with were strong, moral, and they were very male in nature. And there were rules. Things were black and white. We didn't have humanism. We didn't have all this relativism in their heads and their thoughts and their decision making. They were honest and they were direct and things were black and white. And if you weren't that way, you were punished because they were interested in the truth. They weren't interested in your feelings. Okay. And there's some real value in that. I'm not saying don't care about people's feelings, but Scripture says the heart can be the most deceitful of all things. And so what I'm saying is that if you want to make good decisions that benefit you, your family, and your country, you may want to not just use your feelings for making decisions. You may want to look at truth and logic and reality. And that's an important thing to understand. And I got concerned a few years ago when men were walking in my retail store, my gun shop, and they were looking at guns and they were sort of drooling over them saying, oh, I'd really like to buy that handgun or I'd really like to purchase that AR-15. And I said, well, why don't you save your money and purchase it? And they said, oh, I'd have to get my wife's permission to buy something like that. And I said, well, that's fine. Just put your man card on the counter and I'll hit it with my revoke stamp and you can leave. And they would get angry with me. Oh, why you got to be such a dick or why you got to be such a jerk? You know, and I said, well, I'm not being a jerk because technically if you're not the one paying for the gun and responsible for the gun and making the decision to buy the gun, legally, I can't sell you the gun. That's almost like a straw purchase. That's kind of in a gray area. So if your wife needs to give you the okay to buy a gun, I can't sell you a gun. You need to send her down here to purchase the gun herself and we'll put it in her name and you can go around acting like a kept, you know what, think letter B and we'll just move forward. And these guys would get extremely angry. Now, some of them I found out, they lived in a home paid for by their wife's parents. They didn't even have a job. Okay, if you're a man, you should man up. You should be part of the income equation. You should pay for your own housing. You know, you should contribute in some degree, and you should not let women rule your world. Okay? And you think, oh, Sam, come on now. Okay, well, let's fast forward 4 years, and let's look at the church shooting incident in Texas a year and a half ago, where there were 200 people in a congregation. It's a guy with a shotgun blowing people away. He eventually got shot in the head by the church security. But if you watch the video,
hold on a second. Gentlemen, we have some interference here.
Right.
Okay.
But you see, if you watch this video, you will see grown men diving under the pews and leaving their women and children sitting up in the pews exposed to fire while they hid under the pews, leaving their wife and their children exposed. Okay. This was not a church in Massachusetts filled with a bunch of liberal Episcopalians. This was a church in Texas, folks. Now, if the grown men all hide and the grown men don't rush or physically aggress the perpetrator and they hide and leave their women and children exposed, I ask the question, are they really men? In my eyes, they're not. They're a facade of a man. They're a shell of a man. They might have the hair and clothes of a man, but they certainly are not acting like a man. They're not. They're no George Washington. There are no John Moore. There are no Sam Adams. There's certainly no Doug Hagman there. I mean, this kind of behavior is atrocious for men to behave in that way. It's cowardly. It's disgusting. And, you know, when I watched that video, I played that video back 200 times in slow motion. I fixated on every person in that church and wrote down how they reacted as the shots were fired. If you go back and do that, if you do a little bit of research and just pick 10 men in the crowd and focus on what they did, it's unbelievable. This is not how normal men, healthy men with a healthy level of testosterone, this is not how they act in a threat situation. I'll give you an example. My uncle.
I just want to say this. John and I speak about this often. During his time here on the program. By the way, John Moore, thelibertyman.com, thelibertyman.com. If you want to catch today's program with John and Sam, you got to go to thelibertyman.com. There it is right there. Thank you. If you're watching this at home or at the office or at the diner, hello to everyone at the diner. You go ahead and click on that, and you can drill down for the archives. Every Monday, John Moore and Sam are together for the program, for John's program. So there it is, folks, thelibertyman.com. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I did. Sam, you're mid-thought, mid-sentence, continue. But I'll just say this first. Look, the attack on the nuclear family, in my view, it was a communist initiative in order to really effeminize the men, to take away their guts, their desire to act. And also, you know, yeah, I got to say this, Alex Jones is right. The effeminization aspect of men lowering their testosterone, it's been happening for decades. So go ahead and continue with that, Sam. I didn't mean to interrupt, but I did.
Yeah, that's fine. I want to contrast what happened in the church to a real situation that happened in my father's company. My dad, before he retired and sold the company, he ran a printing press company. They manufactured flexographic printing presses in Chesterfield, Missouri. The name of the company was Mark Andy. The family sold their stock, sold the company in 1995. But something very interesting happened while I was working there as a youngster, in the late 70s, I had a job in the summer working in the shipping department, building skids and packaging up printing presses. And I was talking to this big, heavy-set Vietnam veteran who weighed about 300 pounds. He was running this giant machine called a Blanchard grinder that would grind these 6 by 8 foot plates that were the frame siding of these printing presses. It'd grind them flat. And while we were chatting right at the end of the day, a gunshot rang out about 70 feet down the hallway. What actually happened was a disgruntled night shift employee came into my uncle's office. my uncle was sitting there with the night manager. Now, my uncle was a Vietnam veteran. I don't know what the night manager's military experience, but I know he was a man. And this guy came in and to the office and pulled a pistol out. Both men rushed the guy with the pistol. Now, when the shot was fired, the round went through the forearm of the gentleman right about there. It went through his forearm as he was rushing the guy and then hit him in the chest. But the forearm took enough energy off the bullet that the round going into his chest didn't kill him. And both men tackled this guy. And they put him face down on the ground. The Blanchard operator, the Blanchard grinder operator that I was standing next to, you know, I was a kid. I was like, what was that noise? He ran to the sound of the gunshot, not away from it. And he saw this guy being thrown out on the floor and these two men land on top of him. He saw the gun hit the ground. And I was running behind him to see where he was going. I was just some young punk kid, had no idea what was going on. And I ran behind him, and he ran up to this guy and kneeled on this man's neck, the back of his neck, while he was face down on the ground. He said, if you move, I'll crush your neck and I'll kill you. And while he was on the ground, this Vietnam medic veteran dressed the bullet wounds of the guy who had gotten shot. Now, I want to contrast that with the men in this Texas church that dove under the pews and hid while their wife and children were exposed to gunfire. See, that's the difference between how men act in the 70s to random gunfire and how anesthetized, feminized, cowardly men act in the face of a gun threat. And I want to be very clear about this. This should be a black and white contrast for everybody. Now, the question is, what do we do about it?
John, it's up to you.
Okay, well, I need to get a drink of water.
I caught you by surprise there. I didn't mean to do that.
It's been we'll address it this way. The way we have traditionally turned soft city boys into tough young men. Look at football, for example. A century ago, we didn't have these massive consolidated high schools. We had relatively small, by today's standard, high schools. The purpose of football was not to have fun, not to entertain people on a Friday night under the lights. When I started high school football a century ago, it had a very specific purpose, and that was to turn soft city boys into tough young men. That was the purpose of football. Which if you got a relatively small high school, you can do that. But if you've got 1,000 students per class, only a very few students will get that experience. The Boy Scouts of America no longer exist. It's now the Scouts. Boy Scout leaders get in trouble for teaching a boy how to sharpen a knife. Handsome young men, attractive young women going to the woods for a weekend. What could possibly go wrong there? Men who are attracted sexually to handsome young men, what could possibly go wrong there when you've got homosexual scout leaders? I don't know that the communists have infiltrated the Boy Scouts of America. I suspect that they may have. I do know that having the Boy Scouts of America become the Scouts and become what they've become certainly serves the communist agenda. I know that these consolidated high schools take away the opportunity for tens of thousands of young American men to get an experience that will turn them into tough young men. Now, I'm not a terribly big guy. I'm 6 feet tall. When I played football, I was 165 in high school. I found out playing football that being no larger than what I was, I could knock down a man who weighed 100 pounds more than I did. It never would have occurred to me that that was even a possibility if I didn't play football. The things that made our country great in the early part of the 20th century, they're not gone, but they're highly compromised, very highly compromised. Now, there's a family I'm aware of. Their boys have all become Eagle Scouts. The five boys, the last boy, youngest, is now working on his Eagle Scout project. I was at an Eagle Scout ceremony with his family about 2 months ago.
They celebrated it as if the Boy Scouts of America still exists. The cake said Boy Scouts of America, even though that organization no longer exists. They pretended as if it did exist. That's desperation, in my opinion. Desperation for times that no longer exist, for an organization that no longer exists, for the values that our country largely no longer has, largely. To follow up on manly men, Sam, when I was at Freedom Center a couple of months ago, I was getting fuel as I left town. The man at the service station had fingernail polish on all 10 fingernails. I didn't say anything because I wanted to make sure I got the right change, but I was pretty disappointed that in Lebanon, Missouri, that men have degraded to the point where they think wearing fingernail polish is an acceptable behavior in public at the place of employment. Another friend of mine owned a bowling center. He would have female employees show up wearing pajama bottoms for work in the bowling center. Now, it's bad enough to see adults wearing pajama bottoms in public going shopping, but wearing it to work as an employee in any environment, we're seeing a very strong degrading of our culture, of barbarism, in my opinion, coming to our culture. When I was a boy, my mother would not go shopping for groceries unless she wore a dress, gloves, and a hat. That was in the early 1950s. Even she changed towards the late 1950s into 1960, where she wore more casual clothing. But that's the way it was 70 years ago for middle-class women in our country to go out in public, a hat, gloves, and a dress. At my own high school, Herculaneum High School in the country, the female instructors had to wear a dress to work, or they'd be sent home and probably terminated. The men instructors, including the football coach and a shop teacher, they had to wear a dress shirt and a tie, or they'd be sent home and terminated. Boys did not wear T-shirts as an outer garment, for the most part. They did, and they weren't reprimanded for it, but very few boys wore a shirt without a collar to school, almost none. I grew up knowing that a T-shirt is an undergarment, not something to be worn in public. So I don't know that we can change this, gentlemen, but where we are, and I talk to Europeans, and Sam, you probably do too. Europeans can always tell the American tourists, and how's that? The Americans dress like slobs. That's what they tell me. How about you, Sam?
Yeah, I think those are some valid points, but even more important than what's on the outside is what's on the inside. You know, I have a good friend here in Lebanon. He runs an excavating company. I don't think he'd mind me mentioning his name, Bo Allenstein. He's a really great businessman and really manages people effectively. And he's raised some boys. And he has a saying. He says, young boys are a lot like soft metal. You got to pound the heck out of them and heat them up a little bit to harden them and make anything useful out of them. Now, if you understand metallurgy, that is a very fascinating statement because a lot of people don't know most metals in their natural state are quite soft. And we actually heat them, we temper them, we forge them and pound on them. And the combination of the heat and the pounding actually make them hard. So you can make a knife out of them or a screwdriver out of them, something sharp that will hold an edge, something that's useful and valuable and long-term and resilient. And it's the same thing with young men. Now, when I was raising my two boys, my youngest boy was given instructions by my wife, and she was sitting on the sofa, and he was behind her. And as she was given instructions that he didn't like, he turned around and took his fist and balled it up and punched at her head, missing her hair by about an inch. Now, I saw that through the kitchen, the window from the kitchen to the living room, and I walked into the living room and I grabbed him by the arm and I said, oh no, we're not going to act like that. You are not going to be aggressive towards your parents or violent towards your parents. And I whipped his butt right there. She about lost her mind. What are you doing to that child? Stop that, blah, blah, blah. And I said, you didn't see what he did. And see, this is the rub in every family. A father tries to raise a child properly and discipline him, and the wife intervenes and says, no, that's too rough. That's not right. That's not fair. And because the guy doesn't want to sleep on the couch for the next week, he kowtows to this insanity and allows his son to grow up to be an inwardly focused, selfish, childish, feminized brat that it feels like they're entitled to things they're not entitled to. And see, this is the problem. Men are not disciplining their sons, not only because their wives won't let them, but because the government has tried to remove fathers from the family. And I'll point to this very specifically. In 1960, about 27% of children between the ages of 3 and 15 grew up in a home without a father. In 1990, in the inner cities, that number went up to 87% of children grew up in a home without a father. Now, I would offer to you people, the listeners, that it takes a good Christian man to raise a good Christian son. Are there Christian single moms that can do it? Yeah, there's a few exceptions, but the exceptions don't disprove the rule. Core competency matters. And if you haven't lived your life as a strong Christian man, it's going to be very difficult for you to raise a boy to be a strong Christian man. Now, some women are heroes. Some of these single moms are straight up heroes and they do a great job, but generally they're the exception and not the rule.
I agree. And John, you and I have spent weeks and weeks and weeks talking about this very issue. Okay. You know, the attack against the nuclear family, the biblical family, the husband and wife, obviously, it's been ongoing and sustained now for a number of decades. And that's all part of the, I like hearing myself talk. That's all part of the, Great Reset. All right. The, ultimately what this is going to, you know, how things are going to be in the near future if we don't step in and say, no, this is not, you know, we can't have this. All right. So now that I heard voices in my head, I'm going to kick it back to you. And, because I also want to, folks, get in, and gentlemen, I also want to get into the fact that, where we're going here from here with respect to the states, with respect to vaccine passports, if you will, the different states, states are standing up and saying, no. We don't consent to this, and telling the federal government to pound sand versus the governors who are saying, okay, you want to do anything, you want to go travel, you're going to have to be jabbed and such. How all of this kind of interplays or is superimposed, this background is superimposed on the events of today. So, John, I'm going to kick back to you.
Well, we aren't going to change society. What we can affect is our immediate family. If you're a parent or a grandparent, you can have influence on these youngsters. That's important. That's very important. It's important to help these families, raising children, to have a strong spiritual foundation. That's not optional. It is absolutely not optional. If you're a parent and in the process of raising children, you may want to consider homeschooling the child or a private Christian school that you know you can trust the curriculum and the instructors, either or. The public schools, for the most part, there's probably some exceptions. For the most part, you really don't want your child in there for a lot of reasons. Now, this past 18 months, many parents found out they could do something they thought they couldn't do. They can actually homeschool their child. There's the biggest growth of homeschooling since it began decades ago has been in the last 18 months. That's a good thing. That's a real good thing. And I see hope there. We mentioned earlier about being active politically at the local level. Being active at the family level is not optional. Many families have a tradition of a Sunday meal following church. I know families locally here where I live, that's been a tradition for decades. Another family I know, the mother of all these adult children, she fixed the Sunday meal until she passed. Now the children themselves fix the Sunday meal and they all get together for the Sunday meal. We need to take action at the family level, with men taking charge of the manly things, women taking charge of the things that women do best, and splitting these obligations in the traditional manner that they've always been split up. I point to the system of taxation as one of the reasons we have most young women most of the time working outside the family, because the government takes about half of what the husband earns. If the government didn't take almost half of what the husband earns, the wives could do what most women want to do, be a stay-at-home mom. That's what most women would really rather do most of the time. Of course, there's exceptions. I'm at a point in my career, Doug, where I'm 74 years old. Many women who are my peers that I've known for decades, they now found themselves retired with no children, no grandchildren. They go back to where they worked 5 or 6 years ago. The receptionist doesn't even know who they were, despite the fact that they ran the place 5 or 6 years ago. So they have no legacy. They've got a cat. And I mean, seriously, not much else. They were fed a lie all their lives that the career as a professional woman would be rewarding and fulfilling and be what they needed for their life. They get to be 74, 75 years old, and they find it was absolute falsehood that they had a good career, but now where are they? No legacy, no children, no grandchildren, and they got a cat. That's happening to hundreds of thousands of women all over this country. I'm a baby boomer. You know, we're this bulge moving through the demographics of our country here. The bulge is nearing the end of our useful lives. And what I'm saying is being proven out. I know any number of women who find themselves, and they're friends of mine. They're great people. But they believe the lie that a career and a profession was the ultimate thing that a woman could and should be doing. An absolute lie. The ultimate thing a woman could and should be doing is being a wife and a mother and raising children to be responsible adults. Sam, I know you got some follow-up, sir.
Sam, let me just jump in here real quick. The reason, and I believe this to be the case, the reason that this is necessary to talk about is because this is all foundational to the reason why we're at where we're at. And then if you'd like to take it beyond that, Sam, and talk about where you see things headed because of our lack of standing up as men, you know, in the near term here, or when I say near term, I'm talking about the, you know, next 12, or, you know, who knows, 12 weeks to 12 months to, you know, to 18 months, 2 years, whatever. So go ahead, Sam.
Well, you know, you old guys, and I consider myself one of you because I'm 64 years old, but
hey, I'm the youngest guy in the room.
I'm sure I may be the youngest guy in the room.
No, I'm the youngest guy in the room.
How old are you, Doug?
I haven't broke. Well, no, I'm 60 something, but I'm not 64.
So, you know, a lot of American men like to talk about the traditional role of the woman in the family. But, you know, when we get into issues of family, right, I like to go to scripture and let people know that the traditional role of a woman as God created you is not boring, and it's not just raising kids. Okay, that there's some fascinating things about being a woman that make it rewarding and enriching and fulfilling. And so I like to go to Proverbs 31. And my Bible has a man added note to it. It's the description of the worthy woman. And it says, an excellent wife who can find? For her worth is far beyond jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not evil all the days of her life. She looks for wool and flax and works with her hands in delight. She is like merchant ships. She brings food from the altar. She rises also while still night and gives food to her household and portions to her maiden. She considers a field and buys it. From her earnings, she plants a vineyard. She girds herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She senses that her gain is good. Her lamp does not go out. She stretches out her hands into distaff, and her hands grasp the spindle. She extends her hand to the poor. She stretches out her hands to the needy. She is not afraid of the snow for her household, for all her household are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for herself. Now, the reason I go through Proverbs 31 is you find a number of interesting points here. And one of the points is that a woman is a businessman, not just a mother. She's a business person. She's expected to produce. She's expected to buy things for her family with her earnings. Okay? So the biblical picture of a woman is what John described as a mother and a caretaker and a help for the poor, but also a businesswoman. See, it's not one or the other. It's the biblical perspective is to do both, is to earn things for your family and also support your family with those earnings. Okay. And it's no different for a father. We've lost Proverbs 31 in our discussion of men and women. And it's to me, it's critical that we understand what Proverbs 31 is. And, you know, I had big problems with my first wife, and she was disloyal, had many affairs, and I finally got rid of her. And I remarried. But when I went to look for a woman to marry the second time around, I literally went to Proverbs 31, and I read that, and I said, you know, I've got to find a wife that is a Proverbs 31 woman. And so as much as the men need to take care of their male responsibilities in the family, the woman, the Christian woman, needs to get away from this, the only thing I do is raise kids, because that's not what Scripture says. The Scripture says you're supposed to be busy day and night earning and taking care of your family, helping the needy and the poor. That's the model of the Christian woman American women need to get back to. And the other thing I would suggest is that they highly kick their men in the derriere and tell them to start acting like men.
There you go. And John, I think that's 100% accurate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah. All right. Let's kind of take a little bit of a directional change here. If you don't mind. Okay. Earlier in the program, I just said 3.2 million new gun owners in the United States. Speaking of men, okay, perhaps some men are finding their wits about them. I do suspect a lot of those are women, but without regard to that. So what I see brewing here is a very dangerous situation that we have allowed to exist and progress to the point where we're at. People are arming up. They're not necessarily using their guns. They're, as you pointed out off air to me, they're gun collectors. They're not practicing necessarily, or they're not doing things properly. They're just feeling better because they purchased a gun. But beyond that, Sam, and then John, what do you see taking place here, given the draconian Orwellian oversight or overstepping of the federal government here with respect to the COVID pass, the Excelsior pass, the freedom pass? Oh, it's so, these beautiful words. But you see, that's the feds, right? The states are saying, not so fast, or at least 23 AGs, maybe more, maybe less. It depends, you know, what day of the week it is. But what are y'all seeing? What do you see fixing? That's fixing to happen. Sam first, and then John, go ahead. Go ahead, Sam.
First off, I think there were 21 states that originally opposed, and then a couple of others jumped on board. And the 2.5 million new gun owners, is a myth. There are 3.2 million. It's almost 2.5 million per month. That's how many new gun owners this country. The number of gun owners in the last 8 months has risen by over 16 million. And we had 90 million at the start of COVID. So we're over 100 million armed Americans right now. Now, the problem with this, and I keep going back to that, okay, that's the model of the states that will oppose tyranny versus the states that won't oppose tyranny. So eventually you're going to see people, businessmen, entrepreneurs, intelligent women, you're going to see them migrating to the conservative states. That's already started. Thousands of people are moving. The number one state is Florida. The number two state is Texas. The number three state is Missouri, actually, where I live. And so a lot of conservatives are migrating out of the liberal states where the tyranny is occurring, and they're coming to free America. Here's the problem. When the communist libtards get really serious about enforcing their travel restrictions and enforcing vaccine mandates, that's going to go up exponentially, the number of people migrating. And it will reach a critical point where the conservative states won't be able to logistically handle the infrastructure, won't be able to handle the migration. And you're going to see borders and restrictions of migration, not only imposed by the liberal states to keep people in, but by conservative states to keep people out. Two significant implications to that. One is, if you don't move early, you may not be able to move. That's a huge thing to understand that. The second thing is, we have all of these people buying guns, and they're literally acting like collectors. The government does something ignorant or scary, and I have customers tell me this all the time. They come in my shop and say, I want to buy a gun. Okay, why do you want to buy a gun? What do you need? Well, the government said this, this, and that, and every time they do something ignorant, I just come in to buy a gun because it makes me feel better. Okay, great. That's just wonderful, except it's not wonderful. Here's the problem. When you become a gun collector, you're not as effective in opposing tyranny. There are men that I know, hundreds of them, that have 15, 20, 30 rifles, shotguns, pistols in their safes. They're not skilled with any of them, and they don't have a single piece of thermal to mount on a rifle so they can actually deal with a threat at night in the dark when 95% of the conflict stuff goes on. So see, this is hugely problematic. We need Americans all across the country selling their dust-collecting safe queens and getting good thermal and putting it on a good, reliable AR-15 and learning how to use that rifle in a very effective way. And I don't just mean shoot the gun accurately from a bench and shoot a small group. That is not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about learning how to fight from behind cover so that you don't get shot. So we do it. We do this death analysis thing. When conflict's around a parent, what's the first thing that's going to kill you the quickest? And it is almost always the threat you did not see. Okay? That puts thermal right to the front of the line on what you should own to be able to defend yourself, your family, your children, your neighborhood. That should put it right at the top of your priorities. What's the second most likely thing to kill you? Right? So you've got the guy you don't see, right? And then it's not knowing how to effectively use cover. If you don't know how to effectively use cover, you will be dead 3 seconds after a firefight starts. Okay? So there's a couple of things that come from this type of analysis. One is, you absolutely 100% must have the ability to identify threats in the dark and put sights on them and kill them. That's number one. You have to be able to do this. If you can't do this, the 40 guns in your safe don't make you or your family any safer at all. The second thing is, you have got to, under all circumstances, know how to properly use different types of cover. Because if you don't know how to use cover, it doesn't matter. Nothing else matters, because the second the shooting starts, you will be shot and out of the fight. It's that simple. And this is where our American men and women are lacking in their training. They go and take these firearm classes from Front Side and all these different places. And we watch their training videos, and my instructors just cry. At first, we laughed, and then we said, this isn't funny. We probably should be crying at this point because they're not teaching their students how to properly use cover. And they're not teaching them how to use thermal. And if you care about someone's life and you care about their ability to defend themselves in the real world, when there's actually conflicts in the dark, almost always, not always, but 95% of the time, the shooting's going to go down at night. Certain things rise to the top. Having a thermal sight, being able to use cover, flash suppression of your weapon becomes extremely critical. I had a suppressor manufacturer come to my facility last week, and he wanted to show me how quiet his cans were. And the suppressors were nice and quiet. They were certainly above average in the industry. But I made him wait until right at dusk. And then we shot his suppressors. And they had 10 inches of flash coming out of the end of the suppressor. That's no good. No bueno, folks. You get in a fight at night and you got 10, 15 inches of flash coming out your muzzle. It's like a neon sign saying, shoot here next to the enemy. And that's exactly what they're going to do. And so learning how to properly prioritize when you spend your hard-earned money on critical resources, if the priority should be a piston-operated AR-15, a thermal sight, a suppressor that suppresses flash, and then training and learning how to shoot from behind cover with that weapon system. If you're not doing those things, you're lying to yourself. You're delusional and you're kidding yourself about what actually needs to happen on your part to be in a position to properly defend yourself and your family from the coming tyranny.
Coming tyranny, John.
Well, sir, the tyranny is already here. It's already being implemented in California, where to go into many public accommodations, you have to show proof of a vaccination. Lots of rumors flying, of course, about where this is going to go. Sam mentioned Australia earlier. I hope Australia does not prove to be the example of what we're in store for here. I can't imagine the Australian example being implemented in any of the red states. The blue states, possibly. People need to keep their eye on the ball when it comes to what's going on with these COVID mandates, the vaccination mandates. I call them the clot shots. Dr. Mikovits has evidence that about one third to one half of the clot shots vials actually have saline solution in it. That makes perfect sense. If everybody started dying all at once, people would stop rolling up their sleeves. But if you only have a smaller percentage dying and getting sick and having adverse reactions, then you can convince people to keep doing it, which is what they desperately need to do. I believe we the administration, has no more than the end of the year, which is 3.5 months away, not quite 3.5 months, to get as many clot shots in as many American arms as possible. Right now, as we speak, Pfizer is attempting to get the FDA to approve clot shots for children 5 to 12 years old. That's absolutely insane. Even if they worked, it's absolutely insane. A child dying from COVID has as much chance of dying from COVID as they do from a lightning strike. Now, a child with a highly compromised immune system, possibly a type 1 diabetes or some other thing that really adversely affects the immune system, yeah, certainly they're at risk. But they're at risk of everything all the time. There's nothing new about that. So, gentlemen and everybody watching and listening, pay attention to the news. Pay attention to what's going on with new mandates. They're trying to ramp up the fear with the make-believe non-existent Delta variant, which there's no science behind that at all. They pulled it out of the air. There's no Delta variant. They're falsifying the number of people being hospitalized with COVID, saying that 80% are unvaccinated, when in fact it's just the opposite. 80% of the people hospitalized with COVID right now in September of 2021
have been given the COVID vaccination. That's reality. They're saying that the hospital wards themselves are full when, in fact, many of them are completely vacant. Let's not forget what happened just over a year ago. A MASH tent hospital unit being set up in Central Park to take care of the thousands of COVID patients. Nobody showed up. Hospital ships in New York Harbor and off the coast of California to take care of the normal patients because of the overload of COVID patients in the hospitals. Nobody showed up. Now they're trying to do it all over again. And even going back even further, the videos coming out of California, which if you watch them carefully, you see the people walking down the street falling down face first, bleeding out from COVID, actually caught themselves before their face hit the pavement. It was absolutely flim-flam falsification. Apartment buildings having their doors and windows welded shut. Villages piling up dirt to restrict people from coming in with COVID. It was all theater, nothing more than theater. Now they're trying to ramp it up all over again. The combination of fear and ignorance, which is what we're looking at, fear and ignorance, is a powerful motivator, unfortunately, for much of the population. And the simple logic that if you have the COVID vaccination, why would you wear a mask? The vaccination works. Why would you wear a mask? Why would you be fearful of the people who are not vaccinated if the vaccination works? It's a leap in logic that defies all imagination, Doug, that people that have got the COVID vaccination are still fearful of getting the COVID. They being the Biden administration, they have to be quick. They have to move quickly to get as many Americans to roll up their sleeves as quickly as possible so they can get these poisons, and they are poisons, into the arms of Americans before the average person, the average man and woman wakes up and realizes, I'm not going to do that. A friend of mine died from it. I got a man up the street, well-known national personality, Rusty Young, the lead guitar of the rock and roll group called Poco. He and his wife went through a drive-through vaccination site for the COVID vaccine, rolled up their sleeves. 33 days later, he was dead. These incidents are happening all over the country. Well-known entertainment and sports personalities, others that are getting the COVID clot shot and dying and being injured and harmed. It's happening all over the country. Today, AOL was reporting that COVID deaths are now within 50,000 of the 1918 Spanish flu. That's an absolute lie, an absolute lie. If we had an additional 600,000 people die in the last 18 months on top of the people who normally die in 18 months, which is about the same number, by the way, in case you don't know, it would be a tragedy beyond comprehension. But that's not the case. It's kind of funny, Doug and Sam, that the winter of 2020-2021, almost nobody died of the seasonal flu. How can that happen? Well, it can't. Of course, between 3,000 and 4,000 people die every year from the seasonal flu. That's the way it's been for decades. But not the winter 2020-2021. Almost nobody died of the seasonal flu. They're manipulating these numbers to achieve their goal of fear, making people fearful of something that kills 0.3% of the people that get it. Now, who is that 0.3%? They're obese. They have heart issues. They have lung issues. They have a compromised immune system. That's who's dying. The German scientists proved beyond, to my satisfaction, that everybody who died from the COVID in Germany was within a year of death from something anyway. It may sound cruel to say it that way, but that's a fact of life. Most medical professionals, they can tell when a person is within a year of death. Myself, as the commander of my American Legion, I noticed that the men in my Legion post, when they got what I call the old man walk, they were within a year of death. After you've seen that happen about 20 times, you get to know what to look for. The old man walk is where the steps are about half the length of a normal stride, a normal gait. And it looks painful. Every step looks painful. And it's a stilted, short gait walk. When a man gets that, I've seen it over and over again. And we were a small post. We had about 25 members. Now we're down to about 6. When I see a man get what I call the old man walk, I know he's going to be dead in about a year or less. And that's from personal observation. There's no medical data to back that up. That's just John Moore watching these men one at a time get the old man walk and die. That's who's dying from the COVID. People who are at risk of death anyway. And this is not over. This is not over by a long shot. It's going to get worse. I get a newsletter from the travel industry. The travel industry is ramping this up. The cruise ships, the airlines, people who want to travel international for vacation or business. It's getting worse, gentlemen. It's going to get a lot worse the next 90 days. I don't know how bad. Will it get as bad as what Sam mentioned, where a gentleman in Australia driving by himself in his car with the windows rolled up gets pulled over for not wearing a mask? How insane is that?
And John, by the way, folks, thelibertyman.com, that's John's website. If you didn't catch the show earlier with John and Sam, do that. Go to thelibertyman.com and click on the link there for the audio. And by the way, if you scroll down on that website, you're going to find a whole host of assets for you, whether it's news items, things, for example, that you will need for your safety, for your, hey, I'll tell you what, look at that mask. I mean, if you scroll up a little bit, folks, or Eric the Tech, you know, that mask right there, that's going to keep the Volkswagens out of your mouth. But it's a civil disobedience thing, folks. But anyway, all about COVID, the coronavirus, the Chinese Communist Party virus, and all sorts of things. And support John Moore, as well as support Sam Andrews, Freedom Center USA, which, by the way, I believe it's on John's website. It's got a link to Sam. But regardless, there it is right there, isn't it? Yeah, there it is right there, right dead center with the AR on top of the U.S. flag. Now, having said all of that, Sam, you got to, unless you're pulling the Tobin there, which I don't think you are, you got to, or wait, no, I take that back. It was the other way around. You got to hit your video button. I didn't mean that. I mean, I meant, never mind. Boy, that didn't land too well, did it?
Did we lose Sam? I don't see him anymore.
No, I don't see him either. Sam, are you there? Hello, Sam. We're going to try to get him back. But John, you know something? You know, I was just thinking as you guys were talking, all the weeks that we've been on talking about these things, you know, everything is being reinforced that you had said, pretty much everything, whether it's, you know, being a man, whether it's getting involved. I mean, now it's all coming to fruition to the extent that we, as men, as providers of our family, for our families, as protectors for our families, now it's do or die time, isn't it? I mean, so historically, we've been, as a population, the men have been neutered by these communist tactics and globalist, if you will, tactics. Now it's time for us to say, no. We have to step up, step out, and stand up and say no more, not one more inch. And that's where I think we're at right now. And you made some really good points. You know, they're killing us, aren't they? They're killing us with this clot shot.
Well, that's, you know, when it comes to matters of science and medicine, people want to see men and women with credentials. I keep going back to Dr. Mike Yaden. To become in charge of medical research at Pfizer, to become a vice president at Pfizer, it's a pretty short list of men and women who will achieve that level in their chosen career. And we got a little feedback there. Dr. Mike Yaden has said publicly that the COVID vaccines are meant to depopulate the planet. He said that publicly. He said it a number of times publicly. Now I'll put his credentials up against anybody, including Dr. Fauci, who, quite frankly, is a criminal with his activity involving manufacturing these death drugs. So, at my website at thelibertyman.com, we've got the video interviews and written articles, both featuring interviews with Dr. Mike Yaden, former Vice President Pfizer, former man in charge of medical research, telling everybody willing to read and everybody willing to listen that the purpose of these clot shots, the COVID vaccines, is to depopulate the planet. That's what we call in my business and your business, Doug, is clear and convincing evidence. I would not, if Fauci was on a defendant in a criminal court, and I had Dr. Mike Yaden under oath on the witness stand in front of 12 men and women on a jury, I think I would be telling my lawyer, if I was Dr. Fauci, can we enter into a plea agreement? Because they're going to put me in the electric chair otherwise. If once the jury hears this evidence, is there some kind of plea bargain we can arrange to save my life, Mr. Lawyer? That's how serious this is. It's as serious as it gets that these pharmaceutical companies are manufacturing poison that will, in fact, harm and kill people. That's reality, backed up by hard science and hard evidence from people with the most impeccable credentials that can be had in the area of virology and making vaccines. Most impressive credentials that can be had. So hopefully this broadcast today will reach some people that will convince them to not get the clot shot, maybe convince one more person not to get the clot shot. Every person we convince is a life saved. And that's a pursuit that's worthwhile, Doug. And yeah, many people aren't going to be convinced. They're going to say, well, I'll follow the science. Well, there is no science saying the clot shots are safe and effective. That science doesn't exist. The science that does exist is the VAERS reporting system, which reports a tiny percentage. Many doctors don't know the vaccine reporting system even exists.
Sadly, but I found that to be true.
Yes. Even with the faults and the lack of reporting, we got 70 Americans a day dying from the COVID vaccines. That's, you know, on average day in Vietnam, we lost 12 to 15 men. That's horrendous. 70 Americans a day dying from the clot shots. And it's probably, from what we know, a tiny fraction of the Americans who actually are dying.
It's vastly underreported, yes.
Vastly underreported. And you medical professionals out there who know better, shame on you, because you're putting your career and your paycheck and your pension ahead of telling your patients that these things are dangerous. Although many medical professionals don't even know that. A friend of mine, he has poker with three medical doctors once a month. In the June poker game, he found out all three medical doctors thought the clot shots, the vaccines, were FDA approved, and they all three got them themselves. So even healthcare professionals who should know better don't, Doug. It's pretty disastrous, pretty miserable when you've got that level of ignorance.
Yeah, that's very true. Sam, you're back with us. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, I would. I'd like to comment on this. So part of the training that I've had in the intelligence world, how to do analysis and how to figure out truth from fiction. One of the things that you're trained to do is not only look at the evidence, look at what evidence is missing that should be there. So if you go with a particular theory, like let's say people are dying of COVID all over, it's a dangerous virus. If that's your presumption, then you need to look at what evidence would be there. Now look at groups like the Hutterites, the Mennonites, the Amish in this United States of America. Where is the pandemic? Why aren't the Amish and the Hutterites and the Mennonites being wiped off the face of the earth because they all refuse to get the shot? What about all the Christian scientists that don't get vaccines? Why are they not being wiped off the face of it? Why is the news not filled with the devastation in the Hutterite and Mennonite and Amish community and the devastation in the Christian Science community with deaths? Why is the news every night not filled with the tragedy of all these deaths in these communities that refuse to get the shot? Well, it's kind of funny because a buddy of mine was in Walmart here in Lebanon last week, and we have a strong Mennonite and Amish population in the outskirts of Laclede County. And they come into Walmart and shop, and one of my buddies was standing in line, and they were chit-chatting, waiting to be checked out. And he looked at the guy, and he said, so have you guys had a big outbreak of COVID in your community? You guys are a little more isolated. I'm curious if that protected you. He said, we've had no COVID in our community at all, none. And my buddy looks at him and says, well, why not? And he said, well, we don't watch TV. It was a fascinating conversation. But, if the virus was as dangerous as it is supposed to be, that they're claiming in the media, why are the groups that refuse to get the vaccine not being destroyed by the virus? That is a question that has to be answered. And the other thing I'll say about vaccines is I have a very close personal friend who works for a major healthcare company. They have access to all of a person's healthcare records. And this person deals with health issues. 15 people a day, sometimes 20 people a day. And they're reviewing their health records and their health history, trying to help this person get well. Well, a year ago, they were getting 1 to 2 calls per week of people that were supposedly sick with COVID and tested positive to COVID. Well, in the last 4 months, this particular person has been getting about 1 call every 2 to 3 weeks about COVID, but getting 4 to 5 calls per week about vaccine injuries. Now, if that isn't real world evidence that backs up what John is saying about the danger of this poison, what does? But the strongest logical evidence that you have that you're being lied to is the fact that the Hutterite, Mennonite, Amish, and Christian Science communities haven't been wiped off the planet by this virus. Because if it was half as dangerous as they said it is, these people don't get vaccines and they have no COVID.
Well, in addition, to follow up on that, Sam, the same communities have almost no autism within their communities, except those very few unfortunate children who their parents did have vaccines. And that's well established and well known also, sir, to anybody who wants to pay attention.
Yeah, and I would highly recommend that if you even for 1 New York second consider using the CDC as a source for information, I want you to do this, okay? I want you to research the MMR vaccine and research what happened in the courts when a researcher, a doctor for the CDC, outed the CDC for withholding information that the MMR given to young children and given to black boys under the age of 7 causes serious health implications. They hid this for 13 years until this researcher became a whistleblower. The CDC has a history of lying and hiding about the negative effects of vaccines. And you need to be aware of that if you want to try and use the CDC as a source. In fact, the CDC is probably the one organization other than the World Health Organization that you should never take health advice. They have a proven track record of lying to the public about the dangers of vaccines.
100%. We only have about 3 minutes left of the program. I want to thank both of you for being a part of this show today. The reason I wanted both of you on, because you guys are dynamic together on John's show, thelibertyman.com. Bookmark that website, go there, listen to the conversation that John and Sam have, and of course John throughout the week, his programs, stellar programs, a lot of great information, a lot of great guests. Closing thoughts here in a minute. I'll give you guys, let's see here. We got about a minute apiece, roughly. Sam, go ahead and go first. Your closing thoughts here. Get 90 seconds.
Okay. As the situation devolves in the U.S., it's very critical that you understand a number of things. One is that the ability to survive fundamentally lies with your ability to defend yourself. No policeman is coming to rescue you. There'll be no government officials coming to save you, which basically means you need to be able to identify threats in the dark and shoot them and neutralize them. Okay, that takes a thermal sight on a good, accurate weapon and a person who knows how to use it. You need to know how to use cover. From there, there's a couple of critical things that you also need to know. You need to know how to move and how to communicate. If you don't have comm systems completely independent of the internet and completely independent of cell phone systems, you need to understand that the government can shut these systems down with a switch. They can turn it off instantly, and they will. They'll turn food supplies off. They'll turn electric off. They'll turn water off. And they'll turn communications off to gain compliance. This is what all tyrants do. And you need to be prepared for that. And that means some specialized radios, some good thermal, so that you can communicate and survive through what's coming. And if you live in a liberal state that's not willing to oppose this vaccine mandate and you care about your family or your business, you better come up with a plan to move to a place like Missouri or Oklahoma or South Dakota. Because if you're not in a conservative state, you're in a lot of trouble and at infinitely higher risk. John?
Well, I agree, Sam. Our job as broadcast journalists was to inform and educate people so they, in turn, can inform and educate others and make the right decision for the right reasons. I don't know why my image is off center there, but people need to do this. They need to take action now. Time is short. We don't know how much time we've got, but the time is short. There's lots of issues that we'll be talking about as we move forward these coming weeks. And I hope people will educate themselves, do the right thing, refuse the clot shots, help others refuse the clot shots, get themselves trained up to have proper knowledge with a defensive weapons, help others get the proper knowledge, go to Freedom Center USA to get the training so they in turn can train others. That's what we do at Freedom Center USA is train the trainers, don't we, Sam?
Probably that's important. We make force multipliers out of people that want to learn.
Absolutely. And of course, Doug, we want to thank you for giving us this platform to get the word out, sir. We are truly saving lives here. That's what our mission is to save lives. And Doug, if it wasn't for you, we wouldn't have this platform.
No, John, you're too kind. And I want to thank you both. John, I want to thank you for sharing your time today. And Sam, I want to thank you for sharing your expertise, and both of you actually for your expertise. Very informative, very helpful. And God bless you both. Sam Andrews, Freedom Center USA, John Moore, thelibertyman.com. Make sure you plug in and get informed. God bless you both, my friends. Thank you.
Thank you, Doug. Have a great day.
All right. You too as well. All right. Folks, that was John Moore and Sam Andrews really kind of giving the barometer reading of where we're at today. I would like to take it one step further and say, again, I don't believe there's any litigation out of this. You can see the sides gearing up. Now, there's more than two sides. You can see the multiple sides gearing up for what is destined to be a fight. Now, whether this fight goes kinetic or not, or whether we stay in the civil disobedience realm, and I think the civil disobedience is pretty effective, but I think at some point we're going to be pushed to the edge, and I think we have to be prepared for it. And you want to see how our government under this rogue regime is treating us? There's a picture. I don't know if you have that or not. This Biden regime priorities, if you look at the left of your screen, you can see the military men at the U.S. or the military at the U.S. Capitol protecting the lawmakers from the citizens and the unfettered access on the southern border. Well, that was until, at least in Texas, until the Texas, until Governor Abbott said, you know what, we're gonna put the state police down there, you know, the Texas authorities down at that location. We're going to plug the hole, but you've got some 15,000 illegal marauders, invaders coming in. This is not a humanitarian crisis. This is a crisis of the deep state's making. Folks, I want to thank you so much for tuning in today. May God bless each and every one of you. Tomorrow, of course, Stan Dale, the second hour and the first hour, I got some things going on, so can't wait for tomorrow. God bless each and every one of you. Have a great night.